WVW Broadcast Network and The New American are pleased to present The New American TV. This broadcast is dedicated to bringing you the truth behind the news.
Welcome to The New American TV, where we bring you the truth behind the news. Today is Thursday, July 6th. My able colleague Paul Dragoo is on vacation the rest of this week, and I'm your substitute host, Steve Bonta. Cocaine at the White House. Last Sunday night, the Secret Service found a suspicious-looking bag. Sure enough, the substance within turned out to be cocaine. Media reports said the bag was found in a common work area of the West Wing, a location accessible to tour groups, and where some of the president's top aides and support staff work. But that's not what this dispatch from D.C.'s fire department relates. In a story at the Daily Mail, you can hear the hazmat team talking about bagging up the powder in the library.
To repeat, I didn't copy your results on the Gemini.
Gemini's results are a new match found with a red bar, new match found in the library. We'll go ahead and bag. Come on up. We have a yellow bar stating cocaine, hydrochloride.
That message was originally posted at the website openmhz.com, which records and archives radio dispatches from police, fire, and emergency departments. Nevertheless, CBS News quoted a senior law enforcement official assuring the public that agents found the cocaine in a storage cubbyhole where White House staff and guests store their cell phones. A Secret Service spokesman announced an investigation into how the cocaine got there. Makes it sound like a game of Clue is afoot. Was it Professor Plum in the hall with the rope, or Colonel Mustard in the library with the crack pipe? Of course, Secret Service officials haven't stopped speculation running wild on social media. One tweet reads, quote, "They've already checked the baggie of whiff for fingerprints. Come on, man. They already know who left it there. If it was not Hunter, that would be all over the news cycle," unquote. Rogan O'Hanley posted, quote, "Hunter is a cokehead. Hunter can enter the White House with fewer security precautions than other visitors. He just left with Joe Biden for Camp David this weekend. The coke was found this weekend. Doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out what happened here," unquote. Others asked about security cameras around the White House, which should make identifying the culprit fairly simple. As for Joe Biden's feelings on the matter, here's a video of him as senator in 1991 talking about federal sentencing mandates for cocaine possession.
If you have a piece of crack cocaine, no bigger than this quarter that I'm holding in my hand, $0.0025, we passed a law through the leadership of Senator Thurman and myself and others, a law that says if you're caught with that, you go to jail for 5 years. You get no probation. You get nothing other than 5 years in jail. Judge doesn't have a choice.
Well, unless you happen to be named Biden, that is. On the right side of that screen, you saw a more recent video of Hunter Biden, the president's youngest son, smoking what appears to be a crack pipe. Of course, after Joe Biden became vice president, CNN had this to report about Hunter.
Vice President Joe Biden's son was discharged from the Navy back in February after sources say he tested positive for cocaine. Hunter Biden has released a statement admitting that he is embarrassed by his actions and that he respects the Navy's decision, but he is not specifically addressing why he was discharged.
But he didn't spend 5 years in jail. In fact, he didn't spend any time in jail at all. Likewise, his lawyer expects him to avoid altogether a trial, felony charges, and incarceration because of a plea agreement filed 2 weeks ago by the U.S. attorney in Delaware after a 5-year investigation by the Justice Department. The case involves two misdemeanor tax offenses, along with Hunter's purchase of a handgun in 2018 at a time when he recorded in his memoir that he was, quote, smoking crack every 15 minutes, unquote. Federal law prohibits drug users from owning guns, and the Justice Department says that the maximum penalty in Hunter's case is 10 years in prison. There's also a maximum 12 years in prison on each of the tax charges. Pundits expect that instead of prison time, the judge in the case will agree to drug treatment and monitoring. Though Hunter's lawyer, Chris Clark, issued a statement saying his client, quote, looks forward to continuing his recovery and moving forward, unquote, it isn't all that surprising that media socialites suspect Hunter of being the White House's current cocaine caper culprit. I like that alliteration. Mainstream outlets are quick to disclaim reporting that the president and his family were at Camp David on Sunday. But, as Handley noted, they had departed the White House on Friday with Hunter in tow. They returned on Independence Day for 4th of July festivities. Hunter appeared with family members on the White House balcony for the evening fireworks show. However, earlier that day, a federal judge in Louisiana made holiday headlines with a temporary ruling that limits the Biden administration's contact with social media giants. Judge Terry Doughty argued that the Biden administration has likely violated the First Amendment by encouraging social media companies to censor free speech. Among many examples cited in the indictment is the Hunter Biden laptop story. Doughty said evidence presented, quote, arguably involves the most massive attack against free speech in United States history, unquote. The laptop contained incriminating photos and emails regarding the Biden family. Some of those were released online for the first time over the holiday as well by research group Marco Polo. One of these is a 2018 picture of Hunter's Porsche dashboard clocking 172 miles per hour. Others showed him smoking a crack pipe. Texas Republican Congressman Beth Van Dyne, who serves on the House Ways and Means Committee, told Fox News her impression of the new revelations.
Well, I mean, from the laptop, it's obvious. I mean, you have the son of a president who has shown at least the transcripts from the two IRS whistleblowers have shown he's treated with kid gloves. The deal that he made just a few weeks ago, none of us could have made. What you've seen, the photos on the laptop, is actual proof of things that are obviously illegal. And you've got this two-tier system of justice that between the DOJ, the FBI, and the IRS seem to be treating the Biden administration as hands-off, we're not allowed to touch. But these whistleblower transcripts that we finally were able to have made public a couple of weeks ago in our Ways and Means Committee show is that this has been a systemic issue of corruption and slow walking of charges against the president's son, against Hunter Biden, specifically by people within the agencies who have said, don't investigate this, don't ask these questions, don't go to these witnesses. We're not going to give, even though there seems to be proof, at least a predominance of evidence to be able to go and investigate, we're not going to do it. It's an absolute two-tiered system.
One of the whistleblowers she referred to is Gary Shapley, a supervisory special agent and 14-year veteran of the IRS, who was assigned to the Hunter Biden case in 2020. He told CBS News that he witnessed preferential treatment shown to Hunter. He also claims that he received orders not to pursue steps that could lead to investigations of the president himself.
If this was any other person, they likely would have already served their sentence. There were personal expenses that were taken as business expenses, prostitutes, sex club memberships, hotel rooms for purported drug dealers.
How much did Hunter Biden owe in taxes?
So from 2014 to 2019, it was $2.2 million. There were certain investigative steps that we weren't allowed to take that could have led us to President Biden.
And you wanted to take them?
We needed to take them.
And you weren't allowed to take them?
That's correct.
Meanwhile, the House Oversight Committee is conducting its own investigation into Biden family international business dealings and whether they compromise U.S. national security. The committee website reads, quote, members of the Biden family have a pattern of peddling access to the highest levels of government to enrich themselves, often to the detriment of U.S. interests, unquote. Kentucky Republican and committee chair James Comer tweeted about Hunter's plea deal yesterday. He wrote, quote, the Biden family business model is built on Joe's political career and connections with Joe Biden as the chairman of the board. Biden family members sold access for profit. Now the DOJ is bending the law for the Bidens, unquote. He said even more on Fox News about what's going on behind the scenes.
He's talked bad about his dad. You read one of the texts he wrote to his daughter about how he's had to keep his family up. And he's kept his family up not because he did any work, but because Joe laundered money through shell companies identified with Hunter Biden. Joe Biden is the real bad guy here. I mean, Hunter Biden's terrible, but his dad is the reason that he's the way he is. But just because you're a crack cocaine addict doesn't give you the right to take $25 million from foreign nationals and not pay a penny taxes on it. But look, this money didn't just fall into Hunter Biden's laps. It's because of Joe Biden. The evidence is more apparent every day. And to listen to Joe Biden talk about family values, or to listen to Joe Biden talk about criminal justice reform or policy where he wants to hire more IRS employees to go after tax cheats, or have more gun laws to go after people that possess firearms, and his own son pled guilty to 2 tax evasion charges and 1 illegal possession of firearms. I mean, this is a terrible example of leadership in the White House. And surely to goodness, the American people are seeing that, and we can get fresh new leadership next year in the presidential election.
Well, with me today is my colleague, Rebecca Terrell, senior editor of the New American Magazine. Well, Rebecca, it seems like the 80s have called and they want their favorite narcotic back. What say you?
That is so very true. But it, you know, this two-tiered system of justice that the Congresswoman talked about, it absolutely is so blatant. And, you know, it's such a scandal because July 4th, the nation's birthday, our Independence Day, is the day that Joe Biden chose to push more gun control. You know, that was one of the main topics of his remarks that day. And here we have these charges that are very serious charges about possessing a gun while using an illegal substance. And his son gets off. It's like she said, nobody else in this country could get away with that. You know,
well, it looks like even the mainstream media is sort of very, very reluctantly cottoning on to this fact. I mean, you don't see anywhere near the zeal and enthusiasm with which they pursued President Trump, but they're very reluctantly starting to acknowledge this story.
Right, exactly. And I was going to say that, you know, they are going after Trump like they want his, they don't just want a pound of flesh, they want his blood. And, you know, also I have to invoke the J6ers here, who are many of them true patriots, and they're, none of them deserve what they're getting. None of them deserve to rot in a DC jail without a legal, without a hearing, without any, I mean, how long have they been there now?
Years. Well, I mean, you know, the simple fact is that the American justice system is not merely broken, it's more deviated than Hunter Biden's septum. And Americans have just, I think, have largely awoken to this fact, but there's this feeling of helplessness. Well, what do we do? People have finally realized, wow, there are 2 standards that are applied here, but what can we do about it? Because it seems like anyone who tries to stand up in defiance, as Trump did in his somewhat clumsy way from time to time, they get put down. And, you know, whereas people who know how to play the game, like the Biden family obviously does, get away with it time and again.
Right. I think that probably what we need to focus on is election integrity, because we can do that at the local level. That is so important. Our elections are key to this, and we can't let them do what they've done in the past.
Excellent. Okay. Well, thank you, Rebecca. We'll be right back after this, and we will be talking about Biden's 4th of July speech, among other entertaining segments.
Freedom is the cure.
You're dead on. This is the largest experiment performed on human beings in the history of the world.
The more you know.
What they're doing is they're forcing vaccination on people, and I believe they are killing people with this vaccination.
The freer you are.
It's murder. They are basically murdering people in hospitals.
The all-cause mortality, we know, is now higher in the vaccinated group than the unvaccinated group.
Stay informed on the issues that affect freedom. Get a subscription to The New American today, thenewamerican.com.
Welcome back. Well, in a story rich in the clueless irony that has become one of the Biden administration's hallmarks, President Biden, on his July 4th address, pushed for more gun confiscation. There he is. He said, quote, "Today, Jill and I grieve for those who have lost their lives, and as our nation celebrates Independence Day, we pray for the day when our communities will be free from gun violence." That, Biden proclaimed on Tuesday. He went on to say, quote, "It is within our power to once again ban assault weapons and high-capacity magazines, to require safe storage of guns, to end gun manufacturers' immunity from liability, and to enact universal background checks," unquote. As the president is no doubt unaware, the events of April 1775, which led to the signing of the Declaration of Independence the following year, were triggered, so to speak, by a British campaign to disarm Americans in the Boston area, and specifically to confiscate weapons and gunpowder stockpiled by local militias. The shot heard round the world at Lexington Green was in response to an order issued by a British officer, probably Major John Pitcairn, to the assembled militiamen to throw down their arms. When the Americans began dispersing, but without laying down their arms, the British charged forward to attempt to disarm them, and shots were fired. Fast forward 248 years, and it is now America's own president ordering Americans to give up their arms and submit. And Biden is backed by an enthusiastic phalanx of leftists in the Democratic Party, who seemingly have declared war on American gun owners. Biden also encouraged other states to follow the example of Illinois, the most corrupt state in the Union, by the way, in banning the ownership of any firearms deemed a threat by political elites. In our day, the founders' treason against the crown has been replaced by treason against the Constitution, the former a virtue practiced by patriotic ordinary Americans, and the latter a pernicious vice practiced by left-wing political elites who, like the English nobility in 1776, deem themselves morally superior and bound by higher allegiances than the ordinary people they hold in thrall. The Biden crime family is one such elite coterie, which preaches disarmament of Americans even while enjoying Secret Service protection and, as we saw in the previous segment, apparent immunity from felony gun laws that the rest of us are expected to obey. And now here's a newsmaker that's a bit out of the ordinary. Call her Beijing Barbie. She comes equipped with a fantastic new range of accessories, including a huge number of ships, missiles, and weapons of mass destruction that your daughter can enjoy, along with a big bank account full of money for foreign bribes and a range of fashionable offshore shell companies. Along with Beijing Barbie, you can collect her cool friends, including Hunter, the big guy, and of course her BFF Ken Xinping. Beijing Barbie is the coolest Barbie yet because she loves global hegemony and thinks communism is totally rad. And the coolest thing is, we're not joking here, not really. Because the new summer movie, Barbie, is apparently going to be a big hit in China for showing a map in which all of China's territorial claims over Taiwan and the South China Sea are recognized. According to Barbie, the nine-dash line, which China uses to assert complete sovereignty over the South China Sea, is like the best thing ever. But Vietnam is really mad at the new Barbie movie and has banned it, while the Philippines and other countries who claim parts of the South China Sea are considering doing the same. Communist Chinese spokeswoman Mao Ning, however, who is known for her bubbly personality and fashion sense and who is obviously a Barbie fan, told reporters who asked about the movie that, quote, "China's position on the South China Sea issue is clear and consistent," and that Vietnam, quote, "should not link the South China Sea issue with normal cultural exchange," unquote. This is, of course, the same China that has banned many American movies over the years for portraying Taiwan and Tibet as independent. But that's obviously different because Tom Cruise's Top Gun Maverick and Brad Pitt's 7 Years in Tibet don't have any fashion sense or cool accessories. Meanwhile, Senator Ted Cruz, who is not related to Tom Cruise, accused Warner Brothers, who produced Barbie, of, quote, "bending the knee to the genocidal CCP regime to make a buck," unquote. From all the fuss, it looks like Barbie is going to make a lot more money in China than in the United States. And that's, like, totally dope. So, Rebecca, I have to ask. I didn't have any sisters myself, but so I don't know a lot about this, but did you play with Barbie dolls when you were a little one?
I did not, actually.
You didn't? Did you have friends who did?
Oh, of course. Yes, I was very much the odd one out, but no, I didn't play with Barbie when I was little.
And was Barbie an instrument of subversion and political indoctrination? Were you sensitive to that?
Well, actually, my mother was a lot more clear-headed than I think most moms, and she was very judicious in what she let us read and what she let us play with. And I really have to credit her with any smarts that I have now. Because when you try, you know, it says in the Bible, train a child up in the way he should go. And when he's older, he will not depart from it. That it is important to realize parents these days are raising children. They need to be raising adults. And letting them be exposed to things like this. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with playing with a Barbie doll per se, but Barbie dolls teach girls to dress immodestly. I mean, let's just be serious about this. Why are you buying these things for your children? You're teaching them what they're supposed to do when they grow up. You're teaching them how they're supposed to act when they get older. And why are we still supporting Hollywood when Hollywood is indoctrinating our children with things like this? This is a movie that appeals to little girls. It is PG-13.
Ah.
PG-13 is what R used to be.
So you're saying that Barbie really is and always has been a bit on the subversive side. I mean, I think the larger story we have here is that Hollywood, of course, has for generations played the role of trailblazing subversion agent in American culture. I mean, you can go way back to the old black and white films and you can see stuff there that was already consciously subversive. But the thing that's interesting in recent years is the degree to which Hollywood and the larger entertainment industry, which includes, of course, sports, has really bent over backwards to be subservient to the interests of the Chinese Communist Party. In many cases, self-censoring and removing stuff that they find objectionable, promoting themes that resonate more with obviously with Marxism and so forth and so on. Is this? I mean, what do you think is the issue here, and how can we deal with it? Quite aside from not watching the Barbie movie.
Well, of course, yes. We certainly do need to stop giving our money to those who are working to subvert our culture and our country. And, you know, it might seem funny for me to be talking about this in relation to a Barbie movie, but what was it that Lenin said about give me one generation of the young and I will take over that country? That is what they are doing. They're teaching our young people, and we're handing our young people right over to them by, you know, supporting movies like this and yes, supporting things like Barbie. I mean, you have to look at the companies that make these kinds of products. They are supporting, they're implementing ESG. They are, you know, look, do a little homework here. Do a little homework about who you're handing your children over to, who you're handing their minds over to. And, you know, if you look at the trailer alone for that movie, it's a bunch of silliness. It's a bunch of frou-frou. And you know, the Ken in the movie looks kind of light in his loafers, right?
Mm.
And all of this is indoctrinating kids that this is normal. This is normal. This is normal. And whenever there's an old maxim about when a nation fears invasion, they make sure that their sons are strong. And when a nation fears revolt, they make sure that their sons are weak.
I haven't heard that one, but it's certainly true. I mean, there's also the maxim ascribed, I believe, to Lenin, to the effect that they being the communists, will sell the capitalists, that's us, the rope with which they will hang themselves. And we certainly see that to be the case. It wasn't so much the case with the Soviet Union that never had this large economy, but China does. And so China literally has the economic clout to be able to say, for example, the NBA, well, if any of your players get out of line and start talking about the plight of the Uyghurs or independent Taiwan or anything else, you know, Hong Kong, that we deem forbidden, we're going to boycott you. You know, all 1 billion NBA fans in China will no longer be able to watch, and you're going to lose lots of money. And so then, of course, you know, they 1,000 pardons, we're sorry. We've seen, rough and tough pro wrestlers apologizing to China and bad Chinese about for insulting them on this and that particular. And there's a little bit of pushback now coming from Hollywood in the wake of the COVID crisis that I think really exposed for a lot more clearly the nature of the regime there. But there's still an awful lot of this sort of caviling to the whims of the Chinese, which we see in this Barbie movie. I do not intend to watch it. I don't recommend anyone out there watch it. And with that, we've kind of run out of time, but just as a foretaste, we have another story to deal with you to show you from South Dakota on an important issue that we've been covering. We have some live reporting coming right up. Farmers and landowners in South Dakota have met in the Capitol Rotunda in Pierre from noon until 1 o'clock today for the Property Rights Roundup. They are petitioning the governor and state legislators to call a special session to pass measures protecting their valuable farmland from confiscation through eminent domain by for-profit carbon capture pipeline companies. The New American live-streamed the entire event on our Rumble and Facebook channels. Here, we go to our correspondent Matthew Monfort to see some important takeaways.
Yes. Hi, this is Matthew Monfort, reporting for The New American from Pierre, South Dakota, at the State Capitol building. It was the Property Rights Roundup rally here, and there was roughly, conservatively, I'd say, between 200 and 300 people, maybe more. And this was called by legislators and landowners to confront the carbon pipeline that is coming through at least five states, prominently featured in Iowa and South Dakota. And you had featured speaking today, Jared Bosley, the fame who had the landowner, or pardon me, who had the surveyors come through his property, destroy his crops, come in his shop, scare his wife when he was home alone. You had Representative Hansen, Representative Carla Lems speak as well. And they are conservative stalwarts. Representative Lems sponsored the bill, HB 1133. Which would have effectively killed the pipeline. A special note on that legislation was it would have prevented carbon from being defined as a commodity and therefore allowing this pipeline to come through the land. The reason this is a huge concern and a property right concern, of course, we know John Adams' famous quote that when there is no property rights or those cease to be, the tyranny and anarchy ensue. And so property rights is the issue, the name of the game. And this private company, which is getting money from Korea and China, et cetera, is being used as a private interest. And so the whole point, the main point of today's rally was to call on Governor Noem, who is famous for saying and campaigning on property rights and saying that her dad had told her that God is not making any more land, and therefore she should sell it. And so I'll be sending a video over there for you guys as well. But her office is literally right by the rotunda where we had this meeting. I was told that she was standing in the corner, at least for a bit. I don't know if that's true or not. This was a not a partisan issue. It was nonpartisan. You had a Libertarian Congress candidate speak, Colin Duprell. You also had a former Democrat legislator speak, Mr. Fischbach, and then, Dennis Feikert. And then you also had someone who is a Democrat, Dennis Feikert, or pardon me, Ed Fischbach. I'm getting the names mixed up. Ed Fischbach, who is a Democrat, who's one of the main spokesperson for the landowners and is a landowner himself. He spoke up as well. That was one of the strongest, I would say, speeches today was by Ed Fischbach. And he confronted specifically our Senate Majority Leader, who is Lee Schoenbeck. And he has said that he is working, in the past, he has said that he is working hand in hand with the governor. And a letter was read an email was read that Senator Schoenbeck had written telling someone associated with the pipeline that if they went through a development that he was close to him or that he was involved with, that they would not like the legislation this year. So that was a big point today. And because it was the Senate that killed this bill 9-0. And for those of you that think that South Dakota or these Midwestern states are just Republican conservative stalwarts, they've been just as infiltrated as any other state that you could think of. And specifically in South Dakota, it's the Senate. I was in a meeting with our Republican Party leadership. And it was told in that leadership meeting, or by the leadership in that meeting, that this senator has guaranteed 19 or 20 votes. Well, there's 35 senators, and that's roughly 2/3 of the Senate is will vote with Senator Schoenbeck. And so the pressure is being applied to Governor Noem, because although she came out recently and said that she supports the landowners, that was a recent thing. She has in the past helped promote other bills She did not, when it came down to it in the legislature, she did not stick up for the landowners. She did not send anybody from her office. She did not testify herself. She did not use her public sway to fight for the landowners in any way. So she's come lately to this. So to summarize here, as we close up with just a few seconds here, many people here today, very loud, very proud. Our state motto is under God, the people rule. And the people showed up today, and the landowners and the legislators spoke out as well, calling on the governor for a special session.
Thanks for that coverage, Matthew. Our viewers can also get more information and sign the petition defending land rights at sdpropertyrights.com. That's sdpropertyrights.com. That's all for our news segment today. For more truth behind the news, make sure to get a subscription to the New American Magazine. You can do so online at thenewamerican.com or by calling our office at 800-727-8783, Monday through Friday from 8 to 5 Central Time. And stay tuned, because after the break, we have an interview with a former ICE chief who's warning that President Biden's open border is a top security threat.
In 1988, the John Birch Society produced a documentary so predictive, it's as though they had a time machine. Out of Control, Immigration Invasion was produced and hosted by investigative reporter William F. Jasper and looks at the growing problem of unrestricted illegal immigration that, in 1988, already saw upwards of 10 to 20 million illegal aliens within the borders of the U.S. Unknown agents from around the world using the southern border as easy entry. Certainly, some are innocent families escaping hardship, but also certainly some are criminals, potentially terrorists. Is it not appropriate that there be some criteria for the entry of any sovereign nation? Why should the U.S. be different than Canada, Germany, Russia, Japan, or every other country on the planet? Out of Control, Immigration Invasion. Watch this time capsule of prescient wisdom at thenewamerican.com/out of control.
Over 5 million illegal immigrants have poured across the deliberately wide-open U.S.-Mexico border, including communist Chinese military operatives and Islamic terrorists, posing an enormous threat to national security. So warns former Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, chief and Border 911 founder Thomas Homan in this interview on Conversations That Matter with The New American's Alex Newman. The Biden administration's claim that illegal border crossings are down are based on a fraud, he added before explaining the details. Democrats hope to obtain political benefits, including turning the migrants into voters and counting them in the census to overrepresent Democrat states in Congress. Still, there's a lot Congress and the American people can do to get the dangerous situation under control. Let's watch.
Welcome, everybody, to Conversations That Matter. I am your host, Alex Newman, senior editor at The New American. Thank you so much for tuning in. We have a very special guest joining us today. His name is Tom Homan. I'm sure you have heard of him. He was actually the head of Immigration and Customs Enforcement during the Trump administration. He's held many senior posts dealing with border security, immigration, customs. He's also the president of a new organization, Border 911. He's a visiting fellow on border security and immigration at the Heritage Foundation. And he's the author of the book, Defend the Border, Save Lives. There are very few people on the planet who know as much about the U.S. border and our immigration system as Tom does. Tom, welcome to the program. Thank you so much for joining us. I want to start off with what's going on at the border right now. It looks like we have a surge in illegal immigration. It's been going on since Joe Biden took office. How serious is this? And in your view, is it deliberate?
Well, it's absolutely deliberate. This isn't mismanagement. This isn't incompetence. This is by design. I'll explain that in a minute. But right now, we got over 5.5 million aliens have been encountered at the border since Joe Biden's been president, which is historic, historic. The first year under his leadership, we had never before seen numbers first year that we thought were incredible. Never seen those kind of numbers in the history of this nation. Only to see the second year of Joe Biden's administration, he shattered that number. So we had two historic years of illegal immigration. And so the story right now is that they claim they've decreased illegal immigration by 40 to 70%, depending on what news show you listen to. And that is not true. That is, they're planning a shell game. Let me explain that. Just before the end of Title 42, they had about 10,000 entries, which was, again, historic for 10,000 illegal aliens in one 24-hour period. But what they chose to do, and I said they're going to do this months ago, they created certain programs, the CBP One app and other things, where they're actually going south of the border. NGOs are processing illegal aliens that would normally enter illegally, and they're simply processing through parole and bringing them to the ports of entry, so which is illegal. And there's 20 states filed a lawsuit, and they will lose that case. But if you look at the illegal entries right now, Border Patrol is averaging between 3,500 and 3,600 a day that entered illegally. You add to that the over 6,000 a day, every day that this administration is bringing to a port of entry, now you're at 9,500. If you add the gotaways, which is between 1,000 and 1,500 a day, you're still over 10,000. This is still historic. What this administration chose to do is take a large population and bring them through the port of entry so they can claim this is not admissible. These people can enter illegally. We brought them to a port of entry. It's a shell game. They're lying to the American people.
Amazing. So you mentioned that you think this is deliberate. Why would they want to do this? What is the real agenda here?
Well, here's why it's deliberate, because Secretary Mayorkas was a deputy secretary in 2014-2015 under the Obama administration. Of course, Joe Biden was the best vice president of that same administration. In 2014-2015, we had a border surge of family groups and so forth. How do we stop it? And I met with Deputy Secretary Mayorkas hundreds of times. And how we stopped it was we built detention facilities and held them long enough to see a judge. It took around 35 days. Those that got ordered removed, which is over 90%, 9 out of 10 people claim asylum at a border, don't qualify for asylum. It's just waiting to say something, get to the United States, and now they're in the wind. We detained them. 9 out of 10 lost their case. We put them on the airplane and sent them home, and the border numbers went down. Biden and Mayorkas knows this is how we dealt with it when they were deputy secretary and vice president. So what are they doing now with this surge? They're not detaining them. Many are being released without a court date. And for the 90% that get a court removal, Secretary Mayorkas says ICE can't arrest them because Secretary Mayorkas has said being in the country illegally on its own is not enough for ICE to go look for somebody to arrest them. So they're doing the complete opposite of what they know worked for them in 2014-2015. So they're doing the complete opposite of what they know works. That's why it's intentional. And why? I think two things. I think they perceive a future political benefit that many of these people will be future Democratic voters. And even if it doesn't get to that, it doesn't have to get to that. Because when Joe Biden signed 90 executive orders abolishing everything we did on the Trump administration, there's another thing he did. He overturned the Trump census rule, which Trump says illegal aliens won't be counted in the census. Biden says they're going to be. So these millions of people that are released in the United States that will go to sanctuary cities across the country, they'll be counted in the next census. So when they reproportionate seats in Congress, it's going to result in more seats in the House with Democrats. They know this. They have sold the security and sovereignty of this nation now for future political power.
Amazing. Well, with that in mind, Tom, there, of course, is a resolution in Congress right now to impeach Secretary of Homeland Security Mayorkas for this border crisis and other issues that he has been allegedly responsible for. Do you think impeachment is the appropriate strategy? Is that what Congress should be doing about this? And is there anything else Congress could do?
I've called for his impeachment for 2 years. As soon as he got in secretary's job, you know, I actually thought it would be a good pick from the secretary because, again, we're in the middle of border surge. I'm saying, okay, well, he knows how to deal with it. We fixed it in 2014-2015, only to be very disappointed he did a complete 180. So, yes, he should be impeached. And people say, well, Democrats on the Senate are never going to actually come to fruition. But here's the message. When you do the impeachment hearings, when you do these oversight hearings, you're going to subpoena the right people, the right information, documents, and evidence to prove to every member of Congress that they are violating, not only ignoring the law, they're violating the law. And what they've done has brought so much harm to this country. So the evidence is going to come out. Now, the Democrats that are sitting there in the House, they can't ignore the evidence. And I think there's 26. There's 26 Democrats who are facing tough re-elections in 2024, tough battleground states. So they got to make a decision. Do they ignore the evidence and not demand that this administration take steps to secure a border? Or are they going to risk it during the 2024 election, which is going to be very close in these 2024-25 battleground states? But the oversight hearings will prove to the American people what's going on. And I think that that may change the pressure put on this administration to do something secure on the border. So I think it's a well worth effort. I've been involved with member of Congress. I'm telling them, I'm advising who to call them to testify, what information to ask for, where you can find it. If somebody, since I know where the bodies are buried, I've done this 34 years. I don't know where the place can. So I'm helping them to have these oversight hearings, to get the right people in there, so to get the right evidence, and where they can find information that helps with impeachment.
Excellent. And so beyond impeachment of Mayorkas, is there anything else that you think Congress can do? I mean, you know, a lot of analysts said that they gave up a really valuable opportunity when they didn't demand border security in exchange for raising the debt ceiling. Now the appropriations battles are heating up. Is there anything that you think Congress can do to try to force the Biden administration's hand when it comes to protecting the border? And also, you know, same question for the states. Is there anything that state governments can be doing beyond what Governor Abbott and some of the others are doing to try to get the situation under control?
Well, some member of Congress are doing the right thing. We help with the formulation of H.R. 2. That's a bill pending right now on border security. In H.R. 2, in various ways, the bill is called H.R. 2. Within that bill, there are various things Congress is proposing, certain members of Congress, that will close a loophole that caused this crisis. Again, when President Trump was president, Congress, now again, refused to work, but to do the right thing to secure the borders. The president took a series of executive orders. And that's a band-aid approach. It worked very well for Trump administration, where Biden completely turned around. What Congress needs to do is legislate laws that will stop the surge, will stop the loopholes. There's three loopholes, Congress. If they close these three loopholes, illegal immigration will drop by 85% a month. The three loopholes are this: asylum. When you get come across the border, when you get initial asylum interview by an officer, the threshold is purposely really low. Because when they wrote that, they didn't want to accidentally send people back to your country to be persecuted or killed or tortured. So the threshold is real low. And the cartels teach the aliens what to say. A few key phrases. If you say this, then they'll release you into the United States, pending your hearing. But when you get to the hearing in front of the judge, the threshold is very high. So over 90% will pass that first interview because it's a very simple, low threshold interview. But when they get in front of the judge, that's when the proof needs to be given. And even though 90% pass their interview on the border, 91% fail in front of an immigration judge, the same people that did well on the border. So we asked Congress to fix the asylum rule where those two thresholds meet. Raise that initial threshold so they're not released in the country, only lose your case and not leave. The second loophole they can fix is the TVPRA, Trafficking Victims Protection Act. And it had good intent when they did it. So when children come across the border, if they're trafficked, they have certain protections from this country. However, here's what the TVPR says. If it's ascertained through interviews and investigations you're not a victim of trafficking, if you're from Mexico, you can be immediately returned. However, if you're from any other country, not contiguous country, there's a whole process that takes years. So knowing that if you come across the border as a child, you're going to be detained, they're going to release you to a sponsor, and you're going to get many government benefits, and it's going to take years to go through your case. And even when you go through your case and you get the order removed, the government doesn't have the appetite to remove to deport a 7-year-old, 8-year-old. So they need to fix the TVPR. It says once it's determined you are not really a victim of trafficking, you need to be removed to your host country, just like we do in Mexico. And lastly, the third loophole is a Florida settlement agreement that says this: if you're a family group come across the border, they can only be detained for 20 days maximum. Well, during the Obama administration, we had a family group. We put them in a family residential center. Took 35 to 40 days to have their hearing. 90% lost their case. We put them in airplanes sent home. Now the Ninth Circuit does job. He said, "Well, I'm only going to let you over 20 days." In my affidavit in that lawsuit, I said, "If you do that, if you require us to release them in 20 days, which is not time enough to see a judge, and we have to release them, you're going to see the biggest surge of family groups you've ever seen." Of course, the opposition says Tom Holmes is a fear monger, has no proof of this. But guess who was right? What happened? So if they close all, if Congress has closed those three loopholes, and H.R. 2 does that, the border probably 85% fixed. So yes, Congress can pass legislation to help.
Wow. Wow, fantastic. All right, folks, we're going to go to break. We'll be right back with Tom Homan. We'll ask him about national security concerns, human trafficking, and what you, the average citizen, can do to get this situation under control. Stay with us.
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The Declaration of Independence proclaims God-given rights, and we intend to protect them. Working with people like you for over 50 years, preserving freedom and building a better tomorrow. Safeguarding the Constitution by limiting government power. We are restoring liberties, educating voters, and leading the freedom movement. Join with us. United, we will defend our rights. We are all Americans. We are the John Birch Society.
Welcome back to Conversations That Matter. I am your host, Alex Newman, here for the New American Magazine. We are with Tom Homan, former director of ICE, president of Border 911, one of the world's top experts on what is going on at our border and how to fix it. Tom, before we went to break, we talked a little bit about what Congress can do, and you mentioned the child trafficking victims. There have been some whistleblowers who've come out and they've actually accused the Biden administration of being complicit in child trafficking, that they're giving some of these unaccompanied minors over to people who are obviously not family members. What is your view? Is there a human trafficking crisis at our border right now? And how much responsibility does the Biden administration bear for this?
Well, I've been enforcing immigration laws since 1984. I can tell you that human trafficking that's going on at the southern border right now is the largest I've ever seen in my career. And in the administration is complicit. When we had children come across during the Trump administration, we would vet the sponsors that come forward and want to take custody of these kids. And understand that most of the sponsors are parents. They're already here illegally. They pay a smuggling organization to bring their child across the border. And what's the government do? At taxpayer expense, they actually deliver these children to the same person who hired a smuggling organization to smuggle that child, which is a felony. That's a clear conspiracy to smuggle, which is a felony. But since they're children, they say, well, we'll deal with this later. So what the Biden administration did, so when we're on the front list, we get back on the vetting, we would vet not only the sponsor to make sure they're not a pedophile, make sure they had no criminal history, do a background check on them. We would vet everybody in that household to make sure there wasn't a pedophile living in that household, there wasn't a gang member living in that household. The Biden administration, they have so many children come across. Since he's been president, they've had over 350,000 children cross that border. So they're concerned about the optics, because the secretary kept saying, oh, we got no crisis, no crisis. We have a secure border. The worst thing this administration perceives is if there's overcrowding and places are overfull, either with children or family groups, whatever, we can't keep telling people that the border is secure, because it's obvious the optics are bad. We got overcrowding. So this administration has been more concerned with the optics than the crisis itself. So the instructions to the various agencies were, we want you to process as quick as possible, release as quick as possible, because there's no overcrowding, then there's nothing to see. So they cut the vetting down extreme from what the Trump administration did. So the vetting is done so quickly, and sometimes not at all, to release these kids quickly. These kids are being released to people they should be released to. And as a point of my remarks, as of right now, there are over 100,000 children that the government can't find. They can't find the sponsors. They can't find the children. And they've already been, and I've said for a long time, I said many of the children are going to be forced into forced labor by these so-called sponsors. They'll be living with pedophiles. They'll be in pornographic movies. Some of these kids are living a life that is nothing short of a nightmare. And that just breaks my heart. And to prove my point, in the last couple of months, there's been three or four meatpacking facilities that they found underage children working at a meatpacking facility. Matter of fact, at one facility, they found the children working on a midnight shift, cleaning up the entrails when no one else is in the building. So many of these children are in bad ways. It's because this administration not only entice them to come with promises of DACA and promises, no, it's going to be catch and release, you won't be detained. And I told ICE, you can't be removed if you're just here illegally, and we're going to give you free health care, You know, all the things this administration promised them, they enticed the most vulnerable people in the world to come to this country. Then they cut the vetting down to almost nothing. And we wonder why there's 100,000 missing children. So that is the downside of opening the border like they did. I've been preaching for years. And that's why the name of my book, Defend the Border, Save Lives. When you secure the border, you save lives. Let me say this. People want to attack the Trump administration and myself that we're inhumane, we're racist, we're whatever. It's a bunch of crap. But when we had illegal immigration down 83%, think about this. Doctors Without Borders did a study. One third of women, 31% of women that make that journey through the use of cartels get sexually assaulted. So when we had 83% less people coming, how many women weren't being raped? How many children were coming across that river? How many children didn't get released in the United States? How many non-suspected terrorists didn't come across the border? How many pounds of fentanyl didn't get into the border because the border was secure and shut down, border for vigilant 100% on duty? How many billions of dollars did the cartels not make? So you can call the Trump administration anything you want. The Trump administration saved lives, not only migrant lives, it saved American lives.
Yep, no doubt about it. And on that note, I want to ask you about the national security implications, Tom. Obviously, this is a huge subject, a very sensitive subject, but I'm getting reports from people who are in Mexico, people even down in the Darien Gap, trying to monitor what's going on there. And I'm hearing that huge numbers of young Chinese military-aged males are coming across the border. They're being directed up here with help from the UN, with help from various so-called charities and even U.S. government agencies, that terrorists are coming across, jihadists. How concerned should we be from a national security perspective that hostile operators, maybe even special forces intending sabotage or other things, are coming across the border hoping to do harm to Americans?
Well, I've been saying this for the past year and a half, and I mean it. Out of all the issues on the border, my biggest concern is the national security issue. I think what's happening right now is the biggest national security failure this country's seen since 9/11. Because here's the facts. The Border Patrol's already arrested, I think they're up to like 217 people on the terrorist watch list. That's who they've arrested. But if you take into account, right now there's about 1.8 million known gotaways. These are people who cross the border. They're captured on video, drone traffic, or sensor traffic, but Border Patrol couldn't respond because they're too tied up making baby formula, changing diapers, and making hospitals for these family groups. 70-80% of agents are off the line taking care of this surge. So when you take 70-80% of the agents off the line and they end up arresting 217 non-suspected terrorists, since there's so many agents off the line, there's 1.8 million gotaways. Think about that, 1.8 million gotaways. Now, the Border Patrol arrested people from 171 different countries. Many of these countries are sponsored with terror. They've arrested, let's say, 217 or whatever. How many of 1.8 million came from a country that sponsors terror? If you think that number is zero, then you're an idiot. just by the mere facts, the percentages, they were arrested 217. And terrorists don't want to be arrested. They're trying to evade law enforcement. These 217, they obviously weren't well-trained, or just we were lucky to catch them coming across. But we know most spectators come across that border, and the numbers prove it. Now, people ask me all the time, well, how many cross them, and how many terrorists enter the country illegally? I said, I don't know. But someday we're going to find out. It's going to be a bad day for America. So, yeah, it's a huge national security issue. We do have thousands of Chinese in the last 2 years across the border. We're in camo. And a lot of these, not just China, there's a lot of people from the Central American countries that are military age. I actually went down a few weeks. We talked to a lot of people crossing the border. We've talked to before the border to arrest them, and you'd be surprised how many of these young men were in the military. If you look at the UACs, unaccompanied children, 70% of UACs are between the ages of 15 and 17. 16, 17 is military age in Central America. So there are a lot of ex-military come across. There's a lot of Chinese coming across. They've arrested people from Turkey. They've arrested people from Syria. They've arrested people from Iran. They've arrested people from North Korea. I mean, this should scare the hell out of every American. It scares the hell out of me.
Yep, it is very concerning. Tom, we're just about out of time, but tell us a little bit about the new organization you are leading, Border 911. What can normal Americans, just average everyday citizens, do to get involved here to try to deal with the amnesty, with the sanctuary cities, with the out of control border? What are some things people can do, and how do people find your organization?
Well, Border 911 is just starting. I got a whole series of experts. Mark Morgan, who is the commissioner of CBP on the Trump. I got Jason Jones, works for Newsmax. He's a criminal cartel expert. He ran the Texas Public Safety Intelligence Program. He is embedded with cartels. So we got Mark Morgan of Random Orbital. We got Jason Jones, who's a cartel expert out of the state of Texas. We have Derek Maltz with the DEA agent, and his specialty is the fentanyl smuggling and the effects of fentanyl in the United States. We got Sarah Carter, who works for me on Fox News. You see who we have. We have the brightest minds on border security in this nation. So what we're asking, people, once the website will be up in about a week, so people can go there in about a week. But in the meantime, and even after the website's up, what can they do? Demand your members of Congress take action. And a lot of people say, well, my senator is Republican, and I can't, I don't really need to talk to him. Yes, you do. Because you mentioned it early. Why are Republican congressmen and senators negotiating anything with the Dems? Why did they vote for that bill back in December? 17 U.S. senators voted yes on the infrastructure bill, if you remember that. And I was upset. Why would you give away that leeway to the House? Because we were going through the House in January. In that bill they passed in December, not $1 for the Border Patrol. We were still in the midst of the biggest national security issue that we've ever seen on the border. And these 17 Republican senators voted for something, gave the Border Patrol nothing. Didn't give a dollar to border security. But what you can tell your Republican senators and congressmen, if they care about this nation, if they care about the humanitarian issue on the border, the public safety issue on the border, Border Patrol arrested 87,000 convicted criminals coming across that border. The 1.8 million, we don't know who the hell they are, what they came here for, how many gang members, how many are carrying fentanyl, how many are suspected terrorists. If you care about this, you tell your Republican senator, don't sit down and negotiate squat with the Democrats until they prove to you. Show us one thing you're going to do to slow the flow. Until the Democrat administration takes action to address this national security issue, again, the biggest national security issue this country's seen since 9/11, then don't negotiate anything with them. We now have Congress, we have the House, we control the purse strings. If they don't take steps to protect the safety and security of this country and shut it down, don't give them a single dollar. What's up with the come around? There are things the Republican can do, and you need the man from your representative. They take action, or they can leave in the next election too.
Excellent. Tom Homan, former ICE director, head of Border 9/11. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for sharing your expertise and your insights. We sure appreciate it. Hopefully we'll get you back for an update soon. Folks, thank you so much for tuning in. I'm Alex Newman. This is Conversations That Matter. I hope you'll share this out with your friends, with your congressmen, with your state representatives, with your sheriff. This is, as Tom mentioned, a critical national security issue. We've got to get this information out. We've got to get people involved, and we've got to get this under control. Thanks again for watching. Until next time, God bless you all.
That's it, folks. Thank you for joining us for another episode of The New American TV. And remember to visit New American, thenewamerican.com for more truth behind the news. We'll see you tomorrow.
I certainly would not want a constitutional convention. I mean, whoa. Who knows what would come out of that?
Just imagine if we have a constitutional convention, the number of people who will be unhappy and the number of people who say the results are not valid, and then they'll just ignore the entire Constitution.
What we need are just more people that would read the one we have.
It isn't the Constitution that's the problem. It is the people who ignore the Constitution that usurp power and abuse the constitutional power that they ostensibly have.
If you can't enforce an existing piece of paper, how are you going to enforce a piece of paper that has a little more writing to it? In other words, it's been amended.
It's up to us to hold our elected officials accountable.
What can you do to elect good representatives and senators in your state legislature who understand the Constitution and are willing to take a stand?